blessed, vulnerable, and free.
Many of you have heard me say that there was a time in my life where I burned everything to the ground, my life, my business, all of it. It was necessary. There really wasn't any other way out for me. But like the phoenix, I rose from those ashes stronger and healthier, and I rebuilt my life on my own terms. Does that mean every day is perfect? Absolutely not. But every day is definitely better. And today's guest is also a phoenix. She says that she's risen from the ashes many times. And today, this wonderfully magnetic, warm, and confident woman shares her experience, lessons, and passion with us. You guys are going to love this conversation that I had with Dr. Bumi Adoaba. Whatever it is that you're recovering from, there's something for you in this episode. She is a recovering food addict, recovering alcoholic, recovering perfectionist, all sorts of recovery. And I love this message that she isn't recovered. She is in recovery. It is an ever-going process. So listen, maybe you're recovering from constantly being a people pleaser. Maybe you're recovering from self-shame or self-hatred or self-judgment. Maybe, who knows? Who knows what you're recovering from? But I promise you, you are going to love this conversation. So let's get to it. You're listening to The Brave Files, where we share stories from people who've stepped out of fear and into bravery in every possible way. What we know for sure is that when we choose bravely on purpose, we choose bigger, we win bigger, and it's contagious. It's our hope that these stories connect with you and encourage you to embrace bravery in every possible way, day after day. Together, we can build a movement that enriches both our lives and our communities. The Brave Files is brought to you by Vickery & Co., a success and leadership coaching firm dedicated to helping you build a life and a business that you are absolutely in love with. Vickery & Co. offers group programs, membership communities, one-on-one coaching, VIP days, corporate trainings, workshops, keynote speaking, and so much more. Visit vickeryandco.com to get all the details. Folks, in 2008, after 20 years of self-sabotage and essentially playing Russian roulette with her health, Dr. Bumi, I've been practicing your last name all morning.
Don't worry.
Adoaba. I can do this. I've done it right. I've listened to you say it. And then I get excited and then I get nervous and then I screw it up.
Dr. Bumi.
I know. I want to be so respectful. Names are so important. Dr. Bumi Adoaba finally reached burnout. I'm going to do that line again, but if my editor wants to keep any of it in, I'm okay with showing that we all make
Abba.
Mistakes. But I'll do
just
it again.
Just think Abo.
Abo.
And then Abba. Abo. Abo. Abba. Abba. Abo. Abba. Abo. Abba.
I can do it. Thank you so much. You have a lovely name. It's a beautiful name. All right.
It's annoying though sometimes.
In 2008, I get that. In 2008, after 20 years of self-sabotage and playing essentially Russian roulette with her health, Dr. Bumi Adoaba finally reached burnout. You guys have been there, right? We've all reached burnout. Well, since that mask fell, right? Because when we stay in that space of thinking we can do it, it's okay, but burnout is just sucking the life out of us. Well, since then, she's worked tirelessly, plotting a path to her recovery and making her fair share of mistakes along the way. But Bumi is truly a phoenix who has risen from the ashes more than once. Today, she's beaten both food and alcohol addiction. She's overcome traumas, divorce, and triggers, and now leads a beautifully healthy and full life. She's about to be a best-selling author. She helps other folks step into their own power and transform their own lives. And she's here to share her journey, lessons, and triumphs with us. Bumi, welcome to The Brave Files.
Oh, thank you very much, Heather. Thanks for inviting me.
I'm so happy to have you here with us. I wish everybody could see your smile. You have this radiant, big, bright, beautiful smile. What a treat to be able to see that this morning. It's a little bit gray outside, so I'll take it. Oh my goodness. So I love the term. I take some of what you guys send me, what guests send me for a bio, mm-hmm. and then I do my own research and I try to tweak it just a little bit, but that's a very powerful term, playing Russian roulette with your health. So I would love for you to give us a little bit of background about who you are and what your experience was. And what does that mean, playing Russian roulette with your health?
Yeah. So just to start with, I mean, for me, Russian roulette, it was all cut with my lives. That was, I would say, my story for many years. And I'm a dental surgeon by profession. I was raised in Yorkshire, England, and quite a strict family background. My father was a disciplinarian, one of those who you'd come home with a 90% and he'd say, what happened to the other 10% type of thing. Mm. And so it was quite a disciplined life, and it was always education. You know, the power of education was very, very important, especially coming from an ethnic background, sort of living in Yorkshire. So, you know, there was an awful lot of pressure for me to do very, very well. And look back, I thank my dad. At the time, I kind of didn't, but, you know, he was a real taskmaster. But, you know, I did really, really well. But that came with feeling under pressure all the time, having to really validate me. If I did have got a grade A, then it was well done, I love you. And if I didn't or I got a B, it would be, you could have done better. But the I love you never came with that. So it was like, for me to be loved, and this kind of went through my life, I had to do well, whether it was academically or in a relationship or anything at all. It was, I had to be the one that pulled their socks up and really made it happen. So that carried through my life. And from, I'd say, the age of 12, that's when I discovered alcohol. And it my parents aren't drinkers, but for Christmases and birthdays and things like that, they'd have alcohol in the house. And I remember having been offered my first drink at Christmas, and it was a martini. And all of a sudden, it was like a fanfare.
Wow.
The clouds kind of disappeared.
I mean, that's a very advanced flavor palette, quite frankly, like for a 12-year-old to like a martini. We should be more worried about the fact that you were drinking it.
Yeah, this was like it was Christmas with family. And so my mum sort of offered me like a little bit of alcohol as a, you know, and that was part of it. And from then I knew this was going to be my best friend immediately. As I said, my family weren't big drinkers whatsoever. But it was almost like, oh gosh, I can do anything. You know, alcohol was something that made me feel confident, raise my self-esteem, made me function, be more confident with friends. So bit by bit by bit, it was always there in the background. I'd still do my studies. I'd still do really, really well. But that was something to finish off. And it was almost like just a little drink here, a little drink there. But then getting into university got worse. So it was always my best friend. Mm. It kind of solved problems. If I was having a bad day, that would be the first thing I'd turn to. But before that, my primary thing, and this is when I went through finding out about me, was food. So going before the age of 12.
Food is a comfort for many of us.
Food was a comfort. I was a latchkey kid. I used to come home from school, parents were at work, and my mum would always leave me a snack, but then I'd go and, you know, forage for other foods and go look in the pantry and start, you know, eating more biscuits, cookies, chips, that kind of thing. So again, it was my comfort. So I know from a very early age that I had a predilection to have something to fill what I call that hole in the soul. And that's very much what it was for me, was this feeling of even though I was giving out so much, I was still feeling very empty. And so that kind of was the thread, right? It was a golden kind of thread right through my life of having to have something to change the way I feel, to feel better, no matter what I was doing. But then this Russian roulette was knowing in many ways that this was hurting me, but we'll try it one more time. Oh, I drink a little bit more. Yeah. Oh, it's all right. I'm going to minimize it. We'll try again. So over a period of time, it was this feeling of what's going to happen to me next time. And there were consequences along the way. Things got worse. Blackouts. Oh, it won't happen next time. I'll drink less next time. Or, I used to go into blackout with food as well. You know, I'd get so full and so kind of ill, you know, that I'd kind of pass out. But the next time it'll be all right. Maybe next time I'll be okay. And I'd do the same thing again and again. So that's why I termed it Russian roulette. It was, you never know what was going to happen. But I would still
which is really true, especially with the alcohol, right? I mean, tragedies happen from that. Yeah.
That's right, yeah.
So what were your parents, were they aware that you were essentially self-medicating with food and alcohol?
I hid it very well because it wasn't large amounts at the beginning.
Right.
You know, it was enough just to make me feel better. So I would hide. I was very good at hiding things. And that's kind of a classic telltale sign of secret drinking, hiding food, stealing it, sneaking it. That was a classic sign for me. It was alarm bells. You know, I hid it for a very, very long time until I think my mum came into my bedroom once and discovered, I think she opened a drawer and there was bottles in there. That's how I hid it. I didn't think to kind of throw it in the bin. It was this secretive. It was just ridiculous. When I look back, it was just ridiculous. But that was a classic sign of somebody who was addicted, who was an alcoholic, who had a problem. And again, I managed to kind of, I don't know how I got away with it. They did suspect, but then went to university. So again, it's moving away from people who were suspecting me.
Yeah.
So doing it all over again. Then people say, oh, but you don't drink much. But how come you were really, you know, really drunk that night? You came in and you were fine. And little did they know that I'd drunk beforehand to get the Dutch courage before I went out. So it's very much hiding it, pretending I'm okay. But again, it was something that I felt that I needed.
Right. How aware were you at that time? You're obviously very aware now, but if you can look back into that time, especially college, how aware were you of the fact that you were being secretive, that you were hiding this and that maybe that meant something?
It's funny because you're in denial. So part of the addictive pathway is denial. That's part of it. And so there was a lot of denying, minimizing it. Oh, you know, it's one of those things. Maybe I can get around to kind of all throwing it in the trash. You know, there was just lots of different excuses. So I wasn't aware. I didn't have that self-awareness that, you know, I obviously have today. But at the back of my head, I knew something wasn't right. But I just, my head dismissed it because it wanted to carry on drinking. It just wanted to carry on doing what it was doing. Or binge eating. That was another thing. You know, buying packets and packets of cookies and eating that in one particular session and feeling sick and throwing up. And you know, it was again, it's not that bad, I only do it once in a blue moon. And that wasn't true. So we tell ourselves a lot of untruths when we're going through this.
Yes, I think anytime we're struggling with anything, whether it's something as serious as this type of addiction or anything else, we tell ourselves a lot of untruths when we're trying to make ourselves feel like this thing that's not okay is okay. Yeah. So at what point, I know that we've already mentioned that 2008 was a pivotal year for you. Is that when you really started to realize it, or was it earlier and that's when it all came to a head?
It was earlier, and that's when I got very frightened, when I really wanted to stop. I'd had enough. I was sick and tired of, you know, doing the same thing, trying different ways to stop, and I couldn't. And it got frightening. It got frightening. The consequences got an awful lot worse. It was completely out of control. I was trying to make up for it by, you know, just very, very high functioning. So working harder, you know, trying to do everything I can to stay away from food or alcohol. But in fact, I was just feeding another addiction, which was work. So it was...
Oh, right.
Realizing, but then just working really hard and thinking, well, if I work really, 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 really hard and I'm fantastic, this won't happen. So that's when the burnout, the alcohol and the food took place. And it got very, very frightening. I was in a very, very dark space. It was a place I never, ever want to go there ever again. And anyone who was going through this, you know, there is help out there. But I couldn't, that's when I knew it was out of control. Yeah. I couldn't stop it. With all the knowledge, the intelligence, you know, I was an intelligent woman. How can I can't stop this? And I couldn't. Totally powerless.
Mm. So how do you go from that to the confident, beautiful, healthy woman we see today? Like, what are those first few steps from I can't control this, I can't do anything about it, to recovery?
I think it's because I got so ill. I was so, so ill. But every single time I tried to help myself, I firmly believed I could do it myself. I was this intelligent, strong woman. And again, in my culture, we are, you know, we're supposed to be these strong black women. You know, we don't need help. I was raised in a culture where you had to be strong. You don't tell anybody how you feel. You don't trust the outside world. And so for me, it was, I just have to do this on my own. And when it really finally came to the head, vulnerability, this is where my word came. And I felt, I didn't want to feel vulnerable in front of other people because my culture said, that's a no-no, you know. And to get vulnerable was very, very difficult. It was very hard. But I was so desperate, you know, I had to get that help. And that's when I became vulnerable. And that's when everything just kind of fell apart so it can come back together again. And I'm so glad that I could admit and could get vulnerable with the right people, with the people that could support me until I could support myself.
Yeah, that is a really important part of it. I talk a lot about vulnerability, and I'm a big fan because I think true vulnerability leads to powerful connection and growth and self-awareness. But it has to be with the right people. It 100%. Has to be in the right space. There have to be boundaries 100%. Around vulnerability.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
So what was that like? How did you find those right people? And then what shifted for you?
I found help actually through my profession. And we had what we'd call a kind of a healthcare, mental health part of our profession. So, you know, I booked a session and just basically said to the therapist, I can't do this anymore. And I'm scared. I'm really frightened because I know this, it would kill me. I know it's going to kill me.
Yeah, I don't love that you felt that way, but I love that you had this resource through work, that you knew that you had the resource through work, and that you had probably gotten low enough that you're like, I don't know how I'm going to fix this, but I know that it can't just be me, and that you ask for that help. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
100%. You know, I totally realized that I just cannot do this on my own. And it was just, tell me what I need to do. Just tell me what I need to do. And by that time, you know, it wasn't good. Relationships were falling apart. The consequences were, you know, all around me. And it was just such a very hard place to be. But to be able to kind of ask for that help was the first, it was a relief. It was a relief. I don't have to do this on my own anymore. And I'm not the first person.
Yeah.
And the nicest thing about it was no surprise. It's like, we've seen it so many times. And it was like, I thought it was just me, you know. I thought, oh, it's just me. I'm the failure. I'm the, you know. And it wasn't. And that's where kind of, you know, burnout and addiction takes you down, is that you feel like you're on your own. You feel isolated. You feel you're the only person struggling, when in fact, you know, thousands, millions of people are. But you don't realize it because you're in your own little world.
I think that's really true. And the more, the lower we get, the harder life feels, the more we think we are the only person who has ever felt this terrible.
Absolutely.
We are the only ones that have ever gone through this. And when we can discover that we're not alone, that in and of itself, I think, is such a freedom technique, right? Like, oh, other people have done this and felt better.
Yeah.
Maybe I can.
Absolutely. And that's why things like fellowships really work. Yeah.
Mm, yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm really curious to know then, since then, because I feel like 2008 was just a minute ago, but it was quite a while ago at this point. You have really changed. You've shifted most things in your life. So take us from there to what you're doing now, how you're healthy, what this journey still looks like. Because I think with most recovery, it's consistent, right?
Absolutely.
Like you may be quote unquote recovered, but there's still work involved in staying that way.
Absolutely. I mean, I call it recovery rather than recovered. I think that'd be a very dangerous word for me if I said I'm recovered, because, you know, I would stop doing what I'm doing. I think I'm okay. Yeah. But it is work in progress and it does get better. And 2008 was the worst, but it was the best as well, because, as I said, I became vulnerable. I started to work on me with the help and support of others. So I joined AA. That was my first start. They really saved my life, AA. It really got me to listen to other people's stories and people who are, you know, more sober than myself with food or alcohol. I'm starting to realise that they had similar stories to me, and so I wasn't alone. And being vulnerable means admitting that, you know, I had a problem that I was willing to work on. And then slowly I kind of moved from there, and I kind of wanted to know, when you've gone through a period of addiction, burnout, you kind of forget yourself. And because I started at quite an early age, at the age of 12, kind of self-medicating, I didn't really get to know myself very well. I didn't know me. I didn't really know what I really liked, whether music or people or hobbies or anything like that, because food, alcohol took all that away. That was my go-to. So I always worked, medicated, worked, medicated. In between, I had beautiful children. You know, I had a life, but it was always, there was nothing, it was black and white. So for me, it was, who am I? I don't know who I am. So with the help of, okay, I was in AA, but I wanted to find out more about myself. So this was a kind of a journey into the holistic realms. A friend of mine, I know that the doctors were saying to me, why don't you go on antidepressants and try antidepressants, and this will help you as you're getting well. I knew for a fact that I wouldn't be able to get off them once I've started. I didn't want to go through the Prozac route, the antidepressant route. No, I wanted to get really, really from top to bottom, head to toe, well in myself, mind, body, and spirit.
I think that medication can be really impactful and helpful for some people, but we do have to know ourselves, right?
Yeah.
And if you felt like, because of your particular type of addiction, that this was just going to become a new one, it's incredibly self-aware.
Yeah, yeah. And I knew that from the start, this was not going to go well. So I started to find out further through a friend of mine who introduced me to someone who was a shaman. And I've never heard of a shaman before. And it was, I'm this scientific, you know, I'm in this medical profession. And so kind of for me, I thought it was a bit woo-woo and what's a shaman? Okay. Oh, she might be able to help. And I was like, okay, I'm going to keep an open mind. I'm going to say yes, let me meet this lady. And she's a very good friend of mine today. I actually spoke to her this morning. And she's a shaman. I had a session with her and it was interesting, because I felt a shift. Like after the first session, I felt very calm and I felt supported. I thought something is supporting me. And that's why I always say I feel blessed, is that I felt very supported in my journey. There was lots of consequences in the early days. There was a divorce. There was possible custody, the fight for the custody of my children. Yeah. There was a DUI involved in all of this. There was court coming up. It was a mess. So I was having all these things coming at me, and I knew whatever, I had to stay well through all of this. I had to stay well for myself, for my children, for me. So working with Anna, there was just this beautiful sense that there was a peace that I was going to be all right. No matter what happened, there's going to be peace, and I'm not going to be eating or drinking through this. I'm going to be okay. This was really weird. I'd never experienced it before in my life. that's when I got really curious, and that's when I got really hungry to find out more about things like crystal healing. I became a Reiki master. I loved it, self-treating myself. It was just wonderful having those beautiful energies, you know, to calm me down. Crystal healing, meditation. So it all just took off from there, finding, you know, and having fun along the way, what was working, what wasn't working. And in all this time, everything started to, my life started to slowly settle. And even when things externally got really serious and a bit crazy, I managed to stay peaceful. That was, I think, testament to the holistic practices that I was doing. And for me, that was a game changer, absolute game changer.
That is such an incredible feeling when you're used to being at the bottom, feeling low, self-medicating, anything like that. Those moments where you catch yourself going, oh, wow, the previous version of me would have been a hot mess right now. Yeah. But I'm okay. Like, even if you're hurting or even if you're sad or even if things are hard, you're like, no, we're okay. I'm okay.
Yeah.
That is just beautifully powerful.
Absolutely, totally. And it was going from the survival mode. I always felt like I always ran life as though I was on a state of high alert. The minute I opened my eyes in the morning, it was like survival mode. I didn't know where that came from. It was always like, I need to keep vigilant. I need to keep vigilant. And that started to go. That need, that survival feeling, that kind of, oh, that pit in your stomach every single morning. Here we go. You know, what's going to come at me? What's going to happen? That all started to subside. And it was just this lovely, I would say, pool of peace that I could draw on. And that's when it became, my life became more creative and more fun and enjoyable. And I was moving away from that survival mode. And looking again, part of my journey was looking at things like ancestral healing and traumas through the generations and healing that and making peace with that. And that's, you know, that's something I'm very, very hot on at the moment is, you know, let's look in our past lives, you know, what happened there. So again, I started to look into that as an avenue, and it was really, really healing. So all these things, you know, kind of really made life wonderful. Self-awareness, fantastic, what I needed to do for me. I started to find out about myself, what I did like, and I know what I love, and I know what I don't like, and it's all bummy. It's all a bummy now. This is all the fragments of me kind of coming together. It was all scattered, and it's all now becoming, she's here, and there was nothing wrong with the old bummy. It just all needed to come back in the right order. And it was all right, and she was okay.
Oh, if you could look back, if you could have a conversation with 12-year-old bummy, knowing what you know, what would you say to her?
You're enough. You are okay as you are. And that was my underlying feeling all the way through life. I'm not enough. I'm not enough for my family. I'm not enough for the world in general. I'm not enough for my husband. I'm not enough. I have to be better. And me as Olubunmi, as Bummi, is just not enough. So that I was trying to grab and do everything and bring it in, and it wasn't working. And that's when the food and the alcohol came in to really quell that pain. But today I know I'm absolutely 100% enough. And that is the freedom.
Absolutely.
That's the freedom. That's the freedom.
Yeah, that's the freedom.
Freedom to be yourself.
Right. Well, right. And that's the best gift. And that's actually... So the question I have is, you mentioned having children while you were going through this process. And so you started by saying that you love your dad and you're grateful to your dad. But if you weren't 100% perfect, you didn't feel loved. So obviously we are hopeful that we don't pass that on to our own children. What is their experience, from what you can tell or what they've shared, what is their experience like? And how are you choosing to parent differently, or even just be different based on your own journey with your own kids?
Well, fortunately, they were at an age where it was very, very young. They probably inwardly have experienced mm-hmm. some trauma, and that was a guilt that I had for a long, long time. It was a sure. real sense of guilt and a lot of shame around that, which I had to really work on. Otherwise, if I can't forgive myself, you know, I'd be going back to alcohol and food. And yeah, that's right. one thing I had to really work on myself is that guilt and that shame. But fortunately, they were young and they were looked after when I was ill, when I wasn't well. I've kind of done the opposite initially, which was to give them, not be the disciplinarian, be the guide. Mm-hmm. Be the guide for them, mm-hmm. be open and loving and tell them I love them lots and lots and lots and, you know, do all of that. But being very careful not to spoil them. So there was that kind of balancing act between, you know, being a mom, being the, not a disciplinarian, but, you know, guiding them rather than dictating. Obviously, having boundaries with them, you know, as children, but just giving them that sense of love at any opportunity. You know, I love you. Oh, mum, I did badly at school. Doesn't matter. I still love you. We can work on it. You know, and never gave them that. And they both of them absolutely flourished. They absolutely flourished. And they're doing extremely well at university. Yeah. And they are all, I thank God, you know, they are all rounded, well-rounded boys, young men, should I say.
I love that. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Well, they'll always be our babies.
always.
No, I love that. To me, that's really breaking that ancestral trauma, that generational trauma of repeating the behaviors and patterns of our parents that we know caused harm. But, you know, I try to think back because we're all so aware. There are very few of us whose parents had this awareness. Mm. I think that we are the first generation to really dig in to that and to say, maybe they did the best they could, even though it harmed me. Now, maybe they didn't. For some people listening, perhaps you had really dangerous parents, and I'm not talking about that. But so maybe they did the best they could. It wasn't enough, but I can forgive them and I can do it differently. Yes. It's not a judgment. It's because I know something different.
Yes, absolutely right. I love my parents. We all get on really, really well. Got a very, very close family. And they did the best they could. You know, they came to, you know, they traveled to another country where it was hard. You know, they're both very educated, but it was hard for them to get employment. You know, there was the old adage, no blacks, no Irish, no dogs, no Jews. That was the 60s. And it was difficult. So for them, it was important that we did very, very well. So that's where they think by any means necessary. But for me, it's, you know, my dad says, you know, many years ago when I was in recovery that he apologized and he said he was sorry, you know, because he was so hard on me. And so for me, it's fine. There was nothing to forgive at that time. I forgived him.
Yeah.
You know, I forgave him.
Honestly, that gives me chills that he had the self-awareness and the fortitude to say, I'm sorry. And by then you had done your own journey. You'd probably forgiven him a long time ago, but that was his journey to say that and to hear you forgive. I kind of think as human beings and certainly as parents, we are going to make so many mistakes. And, you know, if we can acknowledge it and say we're sorry and then do something different, that's the gold.
That's it.
Okay. So you now have, I think, maybe I'm going to get this wrong, you have a whole new career now, right? Yeah. Or are you still a dentist?
I do a little bit. I do a tiny little bit if needed. We have a kind of NHS problem over here for a shortage of dentists. So I'd kind of dip in, dip out. But yeah, being brave, you know, being the brave fails. You know, I got, that was one thing that recovery gave me was freedom and bravery that I can do what I have choices now. You know, there's paths I want to go down. And for somebody who you know, really struggled with, you know, alcohol and food, it was to help other professionals within the same situation. So I became a recovery coach, and then a lot of people were coming to me with issues around food and binge eating, and they'd heard my story. So I went on to become a food addiction counsellor. And from there, now this was very interesting, and this was like the icing on the cake for me. I wanted to work in a particular country, and a friend of mine said that she knew somebody really, really well who worked in this particular area of the world, and she's quite successful. So I said, please give me an introduction. So we introduced, I was chatting about wanting to work in this particular area of the world, and she started talking about what she does, and I didn't know what she did, and it's future life progression. And now I've been looking for something for quite a while that would be the icing on this cake, a skill, an icing on the cake for my coaching service. And when she got talking about future life progression, it was like, it was just goosebumps. It was like a epiphany. Oh my goodness, I need to find out more about this. And as she talked about it, it was, this would be amazing, because it's like you're finding your best future self when you're in recovery, because it's very difficult sometimes when you're in recovery to kind of feel optimistic or feel hopeful, and it shouldn't be a drudge, it should be joyful. So finding your best future self and bringing the messages back from best future self to be able to embody now was like a wow moment, because for me, a why is very important. It has to be compelling in recovery. And for me, my why was the holistic thing that I found, but many people might find, oh, is this it? It's going to be so boring. I can't drink anymore. I can't eat what I want anymore.
Right.
Is life going to be like this? And it's just such a powerful tool to help ignite somebody's passion for life again, to be able to go through their programs, to be able to get well with something to work towards, you know, your best future self, who has done everything right to get well. What do they look like? How do they think? How do they move in the world? What are they doing in their life? You know, how are they dealing with things? And honestly, there's such a massive shift, you know, with clients, and they think, this is amazing. And then they start feeling empowered to kind of move forward in whatever program that they're doing, and whatever they're inclined to do to get well. It just gives them that massive boost, and it gives them the why. And some people find that they've moved home, or they've taken on a different profession, or they've written a book, or all sorts of wonderful things. And it just lights them up, and it gives them something to work towards. So for me, that was it.
I love
such
that.
Such a powerful, powerful, powerful tool.
Can you talk us through very briefly how future life progression works?
So basically, it's not kind of hypnosis as such. You're not going under, you know, it's not deep. It's a very like kind of a waking, kind of a light trance. It's normally a visualization. And many people might say, oh, I can't visualize, but it's not about visualization as such. It's about using all your senses. So if you can't visualize, it'll be, you know, smell, touch, taste, a knowing, a feeling, that kind of thing. And so it's a light trance that it takes literally kind of half an hour, 40 minutes to kind of induce somebody into a light trance state. And then we ask them, you know, to go maybe 5 years, we go to 5 years from this point, or 10 years, and get them to really kind of open up and see what comes through, what messages come through. So when we guide them, you know, they've reached that point in 5 years' time, you know, what are you doing? Where are you living? Who are you with? And it takes a little bit of time, then they start to open up, and all of a sudden the messages are coming through. Our subconscious is extremely powerful. So we're looking at different timelines. We could look at alternative futures. And so future life progression is very, very powerful, and it's fun as well.
That is so cool and so fun. Is that something that's available to folks who are not in recovery?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. I mean, my niche is recovery, but I work with people who are going through divorce, who want to find their future home, soulmate, life purpose, you know, their true life purpose, dream career. Just there's anything that you want to kind of, what is it going to be like in 5 or 10 years? What are the alternatives? Great. Yeah. So for anyone who needs to know about anything, and yeah, it's amazing. It's absolutely mind blowing.
All right. My listeners know me. You guys know that I can't like get excited about something like this and not deep dive. So I'll probably be certified in this in the next 2 years because I'm so intrigued.
You would love it.
I love it.
Honestly, you'd love it, Heather.
I think so.
Beautiful. And people shift. Yeah. I mean, they literally, you see the shift the minute they come out of their trance state. They are shifted. They've brought the energy back. They know what they want to do. I know a lady who was looking for, she wanted to set up a gallery and she wanted to write a book. And she didn't know where the gallery was going to be. We actually took her forward 12 months and she saw roughly where this gallery was going to be. And like within 3 months, she found it. She found it. It was there.
That
so
is
it actually
so
speeded
cool.
things up. I don't know how it works, but 5 years becomes, you know, 1 year or 3 months or 4 months. So it just quickens it. Our timelines are very, very fluid.
But yes, I believe all of that deeply. I mean, I think science proves it. It's just hard. It's quantum physics. So it's hard science to really wrap our head around, but it's very cool. I definitely need to experience this for sure.
I will give you a session. I love if you'd like a session, Heather.
Oh,
I'm here.
I would. Oh my gosh. We'll have to set that up as soon as we're done with the interview.
Absolutely. Yeah,
yes, please.
It. Yeah, I love doing it. So honestly, tap me up.
I love it. Yeah, that's so exciting. Okay, you have a new book coming out. In fact, I think it might be out right around the time this episode airs. So you said April 14th?
It's the 19th, yeah. So my book comes out on the 19th, and it's called Invitation. And it's basically recovery is only the beginning of a wonderful journey. So for many people who have struggled with burnout, even grief, grieving, bereavement, alcohol, food, anything that you're recovering from, it's just the beginning. It's just the beginning. And these are all the tools I've used and the thoughts and kind of the philosophies I've adopted to help me get well, to get very well. And that's what we want. If we're going to be in recovery, it's got to be fun. We've got to have fun.
Absolutely.
And I've been blessed with a second chance. Fun. And I'm very, very grateful.
Yeah. I love the way you said that. You said very well. So not just well, it's the difference in surviving and thriving. Very well. Which is achievable for all of us. But we have to start, right, by believing that it's achievable, even if it feels impossible.
Yes.
It's somehow achievable.
It's having that belief and having that faith.
Yeah.
That things will get better.
Yeah. That is so beautiful. Now, how can folks get your book?
Right. Okay. So if they jump onto Amazon, it will be on Amazon on the 19th, but if they check out my website, www.yourfuturelife.co.uk, it will be on there.
Okay. Awesome. Excellent. You can buy it there. And so you guys go and get it. You can just already tell, right? You've heard this fabulous conversation with Bumi, the energy, the passion. I can't wait to get my hands on a copy of the book as well. And so go and grab it. And then is that how folks, if they want to reach out to you for recovery coaching support or future life progression support or anything like that, is that
it's
the same website?
On there. Yeah, it's on the same website. Everything's on there. So if you want a session, I call them signature to success packages, then they're there. And there's a contact information, so you can contact me through there as well, and I'd be happy to help. It's very exciting times, the quantum world.
I love that you said that. Yes, it is exciting. This is a really great year. In fact, this week right now is a great week in the quantum world. So that's so cool. Can you repeat the website one more time just for folks who are writing it down right now, scribbling it down.
Cool. Yeah. www.yourfuturelife.co.uk.
There you go, folks. Go and check it out. This has been so much fun. Now, we're not done. We're not done yet because there are two questions that I ask in every episode, and I'm excited to ask you this first one.
Okay.
The question is, how do you celebrate? And you have so much to celebrate. We're celebrating your new book. We're celebrating your continuous state of recovery. Oh. But based on what you've shared with me before, I suspect there wasn't maybe a lot of celebration. So now, how do you like to celebrate?
Well, first of all, I do a lot of gratitude, anything, whether it's big or small, lots of gratitude to be have, and I'm very, very grateful. So I do spend a lot of time in meditation, a bit of prayer as well, just being grateful. And then just reaching out to friends and family and, you know, going out to celebrate, maybe going for dinner, having fun. But I like to buy myself a crystal. I'm a crystal hottie. So I love my crystals. So I love to buy myself, you know, I treat myself. So I'm going to get myself celestite or pyrite or rose quartz. So I will just go for a crystal. And that kind of anchors
me. I love that. What is your...
It's like an anchor to that particular event. So I remember a crystal.
Oh.
I remember that event with a particular crystal. So, yeah, that's mine. And I've got... hundreds.
I love that. I love that it anchors you to a specific thing that you are celebrating. I've never thought of that. I mean, I've done that with other things. I also love crystals, but that is a really cool thing because then when you experience them, I wonder if you just sort of feel sort of a universal spiritual connection if you're putting your hands over all of your crystals and grabbing one. What's your current favorite crystal?
Da, 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 da. Selenite.
Selenite. And how Selenite, do you use it?
Well, I've just gridded my whole house with selenite. So if you put a selenite tower
so cool
on your windowsill, it just gives it that angelic protection, lots of positivity, real high vibration, a lot of peace. So that's my favorite crystal at the moment. I've just moved into my new home a couple of months ago. Through Future Life Progression, I found my home. And so I've been gridding it. Yeah. So I've been gridding it with selenite and rose quartz and all the lovely, beautiful, yummy energies to bless it.
That is so great. I love that. And I love that we have crystals in common and that I learned something new from you about anchoring that in. I know they do anchoring in NLP, and I'm about to start a certification program for NLP, which I'm really excited about.
Cool.
So this is so much
love
fun.
It.
Yeah, it's going to be really
You'll
exciting.
You'll enjoy it.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Bumi, what is your favorite charitable organization to support?
WaterAid. WaterAid, hands down.
WaterAid.
We all need fresh water, and many millions don't have that privilege of fresh water. And even fresh water on tap that many have to travel miles. Kids have to travel miles for water. You know, so many die because of filthy water. So water, WaterAid. That's who I am.
Yeah, absolutely. Support. Water is life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So
thank you.
So we're very lucky.
We are. I feel very lucky. You know, we used to not think that was a kind of problem we would have in the United States, that was an other country problem because we're a bunch of pompous asses, but it is a problem we're having in this country. In a lot of states, people do not have access to fresh, clean water, and it just seems to be getting worse. So it is really a global issue.
I think that's what we have to remember now is that it's not the man in the other country. Everything that happens in that country is going to affect us. We're all connected.
Yeah.
So not to turn away from things, not to turn away from trials and tribulations of other states and other countries because we think it's nothing to do with us. It is.
Oh, my goodness. That couldn't be more true about anything, about everything, about the state of women being persecuted in Iran or here in the United States, about racism about health, about water, about anything. Injustice anywhere is injustice everywhere. Obviously, that's a Martin Luther King quote. It is not a Heather quote, but it is true to such a massive degree. And we really face a lot of that. It's really interesting. This is not where I expected this conversation to go. But here in the United States, we're such a big country and the states have so much power. Mm-hmm. And I'm absolutely appalled by the number of people who think, well, if you're in a progressive state where women's rights are protected or gay marriage is protected, then why do you care what happens in other states? Well, because if you're being, if anyone's being harmed, it affects everyone across the board.
We're all connected.
That sort of, I'm just going to take care of my backyard, you know, personality is so detrimental to our global community.
Yeah. But I do believe it's changing. I believe it's changing.
I hope so.
Yeah, me too.
It has to. Okay. Yeah, no, that is a beautiful. Thank you. Wonderful organization. Folks, you know the drill. Every time I come on here and I say, do what you can. Get to know the organization. If that means that you follow them on social media, share, like, donate, support, give time, whatever that looks like, whatever your capacity is, because we are required to come together in order to heal and grow and thrive.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you for saying
that. I love it.
It's very important now.
Absolutely.
It's very important.
Bumi, will you share your three words with us one last time?
Blessed. And I'm blessed. Vulnerable. You've got to get vulnerable. If you're going to get anywhere, you've got to get vulnerable. Yeah. Really. You know, there's no more hiding places. And it's okay with the right people, with the right support. And free. Freedom to be who you want to be once you're in recovery. Freedom.
I love it. And I love that you added, and I'm writing down that quote. You guys are going to see this on Instagram. If you're going to get anywhere, you've got to get vulnerable. Yes, yes, yes.
You do.
Oh my goodness. I love this. I love you. I'm so glad
you
that
too.
We got to spend this time together. I cannot wait for my future life progression session.
You're going to get it. Don't worry. Honestly, let's arrange it. Let's arrange
thank
it.
Thank you. I believe you. Yeah, we will. So thank you so, so much for being here on The Brave Files, for sharing your energy and your beautiful story with our listeners. I know
thanks,
they're going to love it. Thank you.
Oh, thanks for inviting me. Real pleasure.
Oh my gosh, you guys, how fun was that? Oh, I love this gentle, patient, heart-centered woman. The way Bumi shares her experience and guidance to support others is just, it lights me up. It's so honest. It's so connected. And I have to tell you, after the interview, I had the opportunity to do a future life progression session with Bumi. And wow, what a totally cool experience that was. It's kind of a cross between a meditation and a hypnosis, where she literally took me through the journey of seeing my life now and traveling into the future to see my life in 5 years and then in 10 years. It was a really, really cool experience. I had full awareness. I had all my capabilities. So I wasn't like, you know, out of it or anything, but also I was so deeply relaxed. It was really, really fun. The idea is that with future life progression, you speed up the process of living your future self, of having your future life, right? So it happens sooner. And I'm excited to see what happens next. If you are into this type of work, if you're curious, you want to give it a try, you really should connect with Bumi and schedule a session with her. You can find her at yourfuturelife.co.uk. We'll put the link in the show notes as well. Gosh, I love this session so much that I'm gifting it to the members of my current cohort of the incubator as a bon voyage gift, as a way to set them up for their own future success after our amazing 16 weeks together. So be sure to go and check it out right now. And hey, listen, folks, if you like what we're doing here, there are a couple things that would make a tremendous difference for me and for the show. If you could go to wherever you're listening to this episode right now and subscribe or follow, rate and review it. Tell folks what you liked about it so that other people can find it. It makes such a big difference and I'd be so grateful. And if you love the free content that I put out, whether it's this show, The Brave Files, or my sister show, Was It Chance, or even my weekly live show, Brave in Action, which if you don't already come, make sure you mark your calendars every Tuesday, 1:30 p.m. Central. I am live on YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram with small, manageable ways that you can step out of fear and into bravery in every element of your life. If you like this content, I put it out here for you. I want you to love it. I want you to gain insight and acknowledgement and self-awareness and get lit up and inspired and all that fun stuff. You guys can say thanks by buying me a coffee, or essentially it's like giving a little tip. If you go to vickeryandco.com/say thanks, you can tip whatever feels appropriate to you. And when you thank me, of course, I'm going to thank you, because that's how it works. So you'll make sure to hear or tune in. Make sure you tune in. I can't talk today. Make sure you tune in on here on the Brave Files or in my newsletter or on the live show. And I will thank you personally for your kindness and your gratitude and your thanks. So, whew, what a fun day we've had together. I can't wait to connect with you guys, you know, out in social media world, have you join me for the live show, and be sure to listen to the next episode of both this podcast, Was It Chance? And yeah, all that fun stuff. Okay, folks, between now and the next time I talk to you, I hope that you really go out and choose bravely. Bye now. You've been listening to The Brave Files, stories of people living courageously. Visit us at thebravefilespodcast.com to learn more about the show, find our show notes, and access full episode transcripts. And we'd love to know what you think of the show. We invite you to connect with us via Instagram and send a DM. You'll find us at The Brave Files Podcast on Instagram. Our music was created and produced in a custom collaboration with Matt Lewis from ML Creative Consulting, a boutique firm dedicated to helping clients identify their unique sound and amplify their brand with custom-delivered soundtracks. Special thanks to everyone on Team Brave, from our audio engineer to our producers, associate producers, copy editors, writers, and support team. The show wouldn't exist without them, and we are eternally grateful. I'm your host and executive producer, Heather Vickery. Thanks for tuning in.